Hello and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. I've got the one and only Mr. Doug Stevenson with me. Doug, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm doing fine. Good to be with you today.
I'm really excited because I'm a bit of a fanboy. I was just saying off air that the podcast is my absolute number one favorite at the moment. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, that's great. I take a lot of pride in putting together those episodes, and hopefully they're content rich and people can listen, learn, and apply what they've learned.
Absolutely. I think our listeners will already know about it because we do little in-between episodes and we sort of tee up guests that were coming up. And I've been on the last four, I've been mentioning your name and the podcast. So they'll probably already know what it is. But I know you as like a story coach, but what's the best way to kind of describe what you do? Or is story coach the right kind of word?
Well, keynote and story coach, yes. I help people. A lot of times people come to me because they say, I have a speech coming up. It's a really important speech. It could be very beneficial to my business and to my brand. But so far up till now, I've just kind of been hanging out and been sloppy about it. And I don't have any strategy to it. I just kind of get out there and I speak and I blow these opportunities because I don't know what I'm doing. And I think I can just get up there and without much preparation, I'll pull something off and then you don't get the results. So people come to me when they say, I need to take this more seriously. I know that stories are essential to engaging attention and also building my brand, growing my brand and promoting my business. Actually, a story told well, crafted correctly, can grow your business. It can lead to lead generation. It can get you people who want to sit down and talk to you, who come up to you after you speak and say, do you have a card? I need to sit down and I need to talk to you. You really got my attention. And so I work on the entire speech, the entire design of the speech, and what are the lessons, what are the points, what are you trying to accomplish, what is the strategic initiative for the speech, the stories that go into the speech, the branding messages that go into it that get people to buy you and want to talk to you. And I also work with people on TED Talks and things like that. So yes, I do a lot of coaching from here in Tucson, Arizona.
Absolutely. You mentioned your TED Talk in a podcast as well. So I'll drop a link into it. I really enjoyed that as well. And it kind of like, when I was watching it back, could you talk about the nine steps and your method and everything. And it was like a really great example. So we'll definitely share that. But your background's in, you were an actor. You've been in films. If I remember right, you've been judo chopped by Chuck Norris, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, my initial dream growing up was that I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be the next Bob Hope because I grew up in Chicago watching these wonderful Road to Zanzibar movies and all kinds of comedies and things. And I so felt wonderful after some of these movies. And I thought, I want to do that. I want to be an actor because I want to have fun like that. I want to get paid like that. And I want to hang out with all those beautiful women. And so, yes, I spent a lot of time in my early, from 19 to 35, studying acting, doing plays, getting out to Hollywood, getting an agent, auditioning for movies and TV series. And it was an amazing experience, but it was also kind of a tragedy because putting all that effort into something and then not being able to make it work is very hard. And I'm sure a lot of your financial advisors understand the agony of defeat when you put so much energy into something and then it doesn't work the way you want. You want to get better results. So yeah, I have a theater background, mostly theater. I did a few things in movies and TV, but they were pretty small, like the Chuck Norris movie that I was in. That was my first movie. That was his first movie. That was my first actual opportunity to do a little bit of acting in a movie. But in the end, it's a movie that nobody's ever seen, and it's not something that moved the needle for me. So I moved out of that into something more profitable. I became a realtor in real estate. I discovered that there was a job called professional speaking. I became a keynote speaker, and my specialty in my keynotes was my stories. Stories got me hired. Stories paid the bills. And I had all kinds of content in my keynote, but what people would come up to me and say is, oh, I love that story. That story was amazing. Could you come and tell my other group that story? And so I realized very early on, stories are products. Mm-hmm. Stories are actually things that you can monetize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that the thing that struck me is, I think when you said, you know, in your podcast, you remember, if you think back about the kind of the people that you've seen speak or communicate, it's those talks that have really good stories in that you remember. And that's when it sort of, there was like a light bulb thing for me. I was like, well, I need to develop mine. This is, so I've been on a bit of a mission to do it, because you do remember them. And I think as well, one of the other reasons to get you on as well, there was an episode you did with, I think it was a lady who dealt with data, like boring statistics and things like that. And I think the advisors and mortgage brokers can relate, because a lot of the time the big excuse for not doing marketing in this industry is because all mortgages are boring, or financial planning is boring, or whatever. But you can really bring these to life, can't you, by sort of using, you've got a point that you want to make, and a story is a really great way to get your point across, isn't it?
Well, if all you do is sit down and sell your product is not that unique. If you're selling a mortgage, there's another 1,000 people selling mortgages. The product itself is not what is unique. A mortgage is a mortgage, and they can get one from anybody. But the story that you tell about working with a client who had a problem, who had a challenge, who wanted to get a mortgage, but had specific needs, wants, and desires and challenges in getting a mortgage. When you tell the story of that person and you embed in that story the details and the data that you want to embed, if you embed it inside the story, but the story is about a human being with a challenge, well, then I'm listening to that and I'm relating to that person. Now, embedded in that story are the facts and details and data about mortgages. That if all you're going to do is sit down and talk to me about mortgages and percentages and, you know, all of the things that go with it, because I was a realtor. I was a realtor among thousands of realtors. I had to differentiate myself. I did it with my personality. I did it with my stories. I did it with my ability to engage someone to want to spend time with me. And at the end of the day, if you're a mortgage broker, if you're a financial advisor, you're selling you, because your product is just your product. And the data is just the data. And everybody's got the product and everybody's got the data. So let me just tell you a little story that illustrates what I mean and how story works.
Please,
to sell you and your business. Do we have time for that?
Oh, absolutely. I think I know what story is, and I was going to hope, I was praying that you would tell it. So yes, please.
That's what I found.
I know the phrase that pays on this one, I think.
Yeah, well, here's the story, and I'll download it a little bit afterwards and explain how it works. I'm a dog person. I grew up with dogs. When I was growing up in Chicago, we had Irish setters, and I loved having a dog as a buddy when I was growing up. But, you know, growing up with a dog, your parents take care of the dog. You just get to, you know, have fun with it and take walks with it and play with it in the park and throw the ball. Well, I knew that as an adult, I was going to want to have a dog at some point. But in my early 20s, I was a young actor in Hollywood, and I was living hand to mouth, and I was working crazy jobs, and I drive taxi during the day and do a play at night. And I just thought, you know, I'm not stable enough to get a dog. I know a dog requires a lot of attention, and I can't get a dog yet. Well, all of a sudden, I had this relationship, this girlfriend named Lisa, and one day she just blurts out, "Come on, honey, let's go get a dog. Let's get a puppy." Well, I was pretty infatuated with Lisa, and I thought, okay, fine. Well, at least there'd be two of us to raise this dog together. So we went out and we found this little black lab puppy, just an adorable little 8-week-old black lab puppy, just a cute little ball of fat and fur and puppy breath. And we brought her home. We named her Jaya. We started to raise her together, and oh, she was just so wonderful. I mean, what puppy isn't adorable? Well, after about 3 months, Lisa and I broke up, and she went away, but I got the dog. And so now I'm raising Jaya on my own, and she's the theater dog. She comes with me to rehearsals. She's backstage during the plays because I didn't want to leave her home. She went with me everywhere. I was a carpenter. She went with me on my jobs. But after about 2 years, when she was fully grown, all of a sudden one day at breakfast, she didn't come out for breakfast. And I went over to her laying on her little pillow at the end of the bed, and I was like, "Jaya, come on, it's breakfast time. Come and get your breakfast." And she just looked up at me with these sad eyes, and she didn't move. She was lethargic. She had no energy. And I thought, something's wrong with my baby. I got to take her to the vet. So I took her to the vet, and this vet named Dr. Joanne, she did some tests. She came back out and she said, "Okay, Doug, here's the deal. Jaya's got a little doggy cold. It's not a big deal. It's a little virus. I'm going to give you these pills. And what I want you to do is give her one of these pills with breakfast and one of these pills with dinner." She gave me a little instruction on how you do that, because I'd never done that. So I, you know, took her home, and at dinner time, I called her over, and she kind of loped over because she was still really poopy, really not just, you know, no energy at all. But I called her over and I said, come on, Jaya, sit down. Sit. I got to give you these pills. And I'm talking to the dog. It's like, Jaya, now listen up. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to pry your mouth open like Dr. Joanne said. And you see this pill? I've got to take this pill and I've got to shove it down into the back of your throat. So, okay, work with me, Jaya. I'm going to open your mouth. Okay. Oh, okay. I know. Okay. I'm going to shoving it down into the back of your throat all the way down. Okay. And now I'm going to hold your mouth closed, Jaya, because she said, if I did that, you would swallow the pill. Okay. Good girl. Swallow the pill. All right. So I'm holding her mouth closed and she's staring up at me and I'm staring at her and I can't tell if anything's going on at all. But eventually, after about 30, 40 seconds, I thought, well, I guess she swallowed the pill. I let go of her muzzle. And what does she do? She spits up the pill in my hand. Anybody who's ever had a dog or a cat knows exactly what I'm talking about. They spit up the pill. So now I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? So I did it again with another pill. She spit it up again. And I'm thinking about these pills were expensive. I'm living hand to mouth. I'm a struggling actor. I can't afford to just throw these pills away. So I thought, who do I know? Ah, wait a minute. It's after hours at the vet. It's too late to call the vet. They charge me extra. I need to call somebody. Who do I know that's got a, oh, John, my friend John's got a dog. So I called up John on the phone. I said, John, listen up. I got a problem. He says, are you okay? And I said, no, it's not me. It's not me. Jaya. Jaya is sick and I'm supposed to give her these pills. And I keep opening her mouth and I shove the pill. Yeah, she just spits it up. What do you do? What do you do with Buddy? And he says, well, do you have any peanut butter? And I said, what has that got to do with anything? Of course, I got some peanut butter. Do you want to borrow some peanut butter? And he says, no. Here's what you do, Doug. You got to get out some peanut butter and you put some in the palm of your hand and you stick the pill inside it. You hide the pill in the peanut butter. And then she'll eat the pill and the peanut butter and she'll get the pill. I said, hide the pill in the peanut butter. That's going to work. And he says, yeah. It works with Buddy all the time. I said, okay. Hung up the phone. Went into the kitchen. Got some peanut butter. Stuck it in my palm. Hid the pill in the peanut butter. Walked over to Jaya. Held it down in front of her face. And all of a sudden, she lifts up her head. She sniffs. And she starts licking at the peanut butter. And all of a sudden, within 30 seconds, the peanut butter is gone. And the pill is gone. And she got better. And so every time I had to give her a pill, I'd hide the pill in the peanut butter. Now, question is, what the heck does this have to do with financial planning, mortgage brokers? You have got data. You've got facts. You've got mortgages. You've got, you know, whatever it is, annuities that you want to sell. That's just the pill. The pill is just the information. It's the data. It's dry. It's technical. And it's hard for your clients to swallow because it's boring. But the peanut butter, the story, is what gets people's attention. That's what they relate to. And if you hide the pill, like I said, embed some of the information about your product inside the story of a customer who you've helped. If you hide the pill in the peanut butter, the story butter, that will get better results. So as you're listening to this, I'm going to ask you a question. All of you listening to the podcast, do you have too much pill and not enough peanut butter? Do you think it might be wise to learn how to tell stories better so you can get better results and sell more product? My challenge for you is to learn how to hide the pill in the peanut butter. Now, I will tell you this. This is a story that I tell to prospective clients. Just like you, when I've got a prospective client, I've got to sit down and have a meeting with them, usually over the phone, and they're asking me questions. Doug, we heard that storytelling is the way to go. We need to sell more product. But we have a challenge. We got too much pill. We got too much data, too much information, too much compliance and science. And this is specifically to pharmaceutical companies. A lot of times I'm talking to a pharmaceutical company and they tell me they've got too much data. And they've got to have these meetings with physicians. And they go in and they meet with a physician and they talk about the pill. They talk about the science and the compliance. And this one lady on the phone with me once, she said, we feel like we're shoving our content down people's throats, but we know storytelling is something we need to learn more about. How do you work with people, Doug? What do you do? Well, I told her the story about the pill and the peanut butter. And she said, oh my gosh, that's our problem. We're talking about the pill we're not talking about the patient. It's too much pill, not enough peanut butter. And I got hired on the spot. This story, the pill and the peanut butter story, has made me millions of dollars because people get the idea, they get the concept, but they also relate to me and my dog and shoving a pill down people's throats. And the metaphor that the pill is your science, it's your data, it's your facts that everybody else has, that if you only talk about that, people spit it up. They cough it up. Their brains literally go, I don't like it. It's boring. And you don't differentiate yourself. So my suggestion is learn how to hide the pill and the peanut butter, and you will sell more products and services.
Love it. I was going to ask if you would tell us that one. So I really appreciate it. I imagine some people are thinking, okay, like, where do I begin? And you've talked about this kind of story safari, going on a story safari. Is that where you start to kind of think about what stories you've got that you can leverage? Or do you think about the point I want to make first?
The first thing you do, the first step in this strategic approach to storytelling in business, is that you sit down and you write down, or you open up a file, a Word file or something, and you write down, what are the objections that I hear all the time that prevent me from making a sale? What are the questions that I get all the time? I hear them all the time. They're not new when I hear them. But my response to those questions and objections is an ad lib. It's different every time. And a lot of times I respond with facts and data and logic, and then I don't make the sale. Write those down, the questions, the objections, the challenges that you hear that get in the way of you making a sale. Now we go on a story safari. Now we say, okay, the objection is I need to call them and think about it. All right, well, who else have I ever had who sat down in my office and said, I need to go home and think about it? But something that I said or did in that one conversation with that one client caused them to make a decision right then and there in the room. What did I say to them? What did I do with that one person that was different than the other time? And that's the story. It's the story of the person, the couple, that had the same objection. So you meet an objection with a story about someone else who had the same objection. You meet the question with a story about somebody else who had the same question. But now you have a call to action like hide the pill in the peanut butter, or make your move today, or the mortgage is going to work out, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. And this is your, what you call the phrase that pays, right?
Right.
And there's quite some complexity to that in the book as well, because the way you say you'll put the pill in the peanut butter is there's lots of P's. So I remember there being like different kind of words and things that go to, because that's the thing that people kind of remember first, isn't it? It's that phrase that pays, because that's the lesson, isn't it?
Well, the phrase that pays is a verb-oriented call to action, and it summarizes the lesson of your story with a catchy phrase like, hide the pill in the peanut butter. The pill in the peanut butter is very catchy because it's alliterative. Another one of my very, very successful phrase that pays that people remember years and years and decades after I tell it is, look for the limo. And it's a story about flying in on the same day as a booking that in the evening, getting delayed flights, getting delayed, 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 rushing out at the last second to the curb to get to the last shuttle bus that would get me to the hotel on time to give my speech. The shuttle bus passes me by. There's no more shuttle buses. There's no taxis. I'm standing there at the curb. I am absolutely flummoxed. It's like, oh my God, I blew it. I blew it. These delayed flights blew it. And I look around and I'm thinking, what can I do? What can I do? And sitting in front of me is a limo. And I ask the guy, could you possibly give me a ride? Could you possibly give me a ride? I'm in trouble. I got to get there for a speech. And he says, well, you know, the guy I was going to give a ride to, his flight got canceled, so I was just going to deadhead back to the office. And I said, well, can we work something out? And he said, give me 20 bucks. I said, okay, I'll give you 20 bucks. I gave him 20 bucks and he gave me a ride. And the lesson of the story is when things don't work out the way you think they're supposed to work out, don't look for the shuttle, look for the limo. But look for the limo is another phrase that pays. It's verb-oriented, look for the what? For the limo. It's alliterative. Look for the limo, two L's. But a phrase that pays does not have to be alliterative. Mm-hmm. Another one of my phrases is get out of the bus. That's not alliterative, mm-hmm. but it tells people what they need to do in order to take a risk. Get out of the bus. I was in a Volkswagen bus. I was going to go streaking. I was freaking out. And I had to either make a choice. I'm going to get out of the bus and go streaking, or I'm going to stay in the bus and not take a risk. So yeah. I say, get out of the bus. So a phrase that pays is the way that you make the point of your story. Story doesn't work unless there's a catchy phrase at the end, a point at the end that causes people to take action. Hide the pill in the peanut butter causes people to take action. They know what they need to do, and they know that they need me to help them do that. Many of your people listening to this are probably listening and thinking, well, I need Doug because I don't know how to do this. I don't think like this.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a successful coaching business is people come to me because they say, I want to tell stories the way you tell stories, but I don't have your brain. I don't have your instincts. I don't have your methodology. And so the story theater method is a strategic approach to storytelling in business that helps you to get results.
Do you get the common sort of objection that some people, because you've got this kind of acting background, and when you're speaking these in person as well, you're doing the actions of feeding the dog and everything like that. And some people like financial advisors, mortgage brokers, well, just anyone generally in life can be quite reserved. Do you think anyone can do this kind of, I suppose, I'm going to answer my question. Yes, you do. But I suppose, why do you think anyone can use this method and get their point across without telling a dull story?
Well, here's the thing. I'm telling stories and you can't see me. Mm. You can only hear me. But you can tell that I am having fun with the stories. I've got a lot of energy around the stories. I've got a lot of passion around telling these stories. They're colorful. They're fun. And I get into it. But the people that I coach are not like me at all. I mean, I've worked in banking, in pharma, in manufacturing. I mean, the people that I work with are not actors. They have no intention of being actors. And quite often, they're accountants. They're people who are introverts. They're people who are left-brain thinkers. And yet, everybody can benefit by learning how to tell a story. And it does not have to be theatrical. It just has to be crafted correctly. It's just like any other product that's developed with R&D. I R&D stories. I research and develop stories. And there's a 9 steps of story structure process, methodology that people follow. And then I help them find what is the phrase that pays. And a lot of times I can find the phrase that pays really quickly when people, they don't have any idea what that is. Because that's my brain. This is my brain on story. Doesn't have to be your brain on story because you got a coach like me. It's my brain on story. Put my brain together with your need. We get a result.
Love it. Love it. So I'm dying to get your advice on one of my phrases that pays. But before I do that, and if that's okay, I really want to find out, like, out of the people you've coached, who are you most proud of? Or is there someone that you can think, I've watched back their speech and I was really proud of their talk or their performance, or whether it doesn't have to be the best one, or someone where you their improvement that you were kind of really pleased to see? Or can you think of someone that you've coached that was fits that?
Well, for quite a long time, this is a great question because the proof is in the pudding. Do people get results? For the longest time, I was doing these things called story retreats, story theater retreats in my home in Colorado Springs. I had a little studio in my home. And I'd have 6 people come in for 2.5 days. And I would work with them on their story, on the drama, on the comedy, on the performance, on the 9 steps, on the phrase that pays. And one time I had one of my students come back about 2 years later. And she had grown her professional speaking business to the point where it was really cruising. She was very happy with it. However, she had a story that she was afraid to tell. Not necessarily afraid, but she was hesitating to tell it because she said, Doug, this is my big, 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 hairy story. It's emotional. It's my cancer story. I'm not a storyteller like you, but I know that I have to tell this story. I've been avoiding it for years. I want to tell my cancer story. Can I hire you to work with me on my cancer story? Now, she's a networking speaker. So what does a cancer story have to do with networking? Well, she came to me. We worked in my studio for a couple hours. She went back out and she told the story. She called me up afterwards. She said, okay, Doug, I want to tell you how it went. First of all, Doug, I have never felt that level of connection with an audience in my entire speaking career. And I've given hundreds of speeches, and I've never felt that. I mean, it was tangible. You could hear a pin drop, but I felt that connection. They were hanging on every word. And I said, great, great. So that felt a lot better. Is that what you're saying to me? And she says, yeah, but here's the real kicker. You know, I brought my books because I sell my book at the back of the room. I sold out. And quite often when I bring my books, I'll sell a bunch of books, but I don't sell out. I sold out all of my books. And I could have sold another 50 books if I had them. So it didn't just work in terms of connection. And I felt amazing telling that story. And now that can be a foundational part of my business. I sold more books. I made money. And so the moral of this story is, yeah, she worked on her story. She took it seriously. It was a story she wasn't quite sure what she could do with. But instinctively, she knew, I have to tell this story. She got better results. Another client that I worked with 20 years ago in a story theater retreat, he's an athlete who had an accident in a hurdle race during a competition, and he ended up losing half of his leg, which killed his career. We found a phrase that pays for him. And it was the phrase that pays is, this is the new normal. This is the new normal. And this was well before we've heard this phrase lately, but this was 20 years ago. He's been using that phrase ever since. He says to me that phrase has been a foundational piece of the growth of his business over the years. Now, I've also had people who have no intention of being professional speakers who have come to me to work on their TED Talks. And a lot of the people who are giving TED Talks are not intent on becoming professional speakers. They've just got something really important that they want to say, that they believe in. They've got an issue. They've got a cause. And so many of my students have come to me and said, I'm freaking out about this thing because I know I have to do this 10 minutes and I've never done something like this. And I help them and they go out and they end up giving their TED Talk. And I hear from them afterward and they said, I could not have done that without you, Doug. I could not have had that success. And that was one of the high points in my life, to give that TED Talk. And do they get hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views? Nah, not necessarily. But the satisfaction that they get of knowing that they gave a speech, the best speech that they've ever given, that they nailed it in that moment when the pressure was on, and they walk away feeling like, wow, I got my message out, and now I've got that video on YouTube and I can promote it. That makes a difference in people's lives. So it's not always about making money.
Absolutely. So before I let you go, I'm struggling with a story at the moment, and then the phrase that pays, I'm not sure if it makes sense. I don't think it makes sense on its own.
It only makes sense in the context of the story that precedes it.
Well, then I think it does. So the phrase that pays is, you've got to go for seven, okay? And when I was a kid, I played a lot of rugby union. So it's not very big in the States, but our ball is like an American football ball. And it's a little bit, it's a bit, probably as confusing as American football. But the point I want to make... All right, cool. So when there's a penalty in the opposition half, you have a decision to either, you can kick for goal and get 3 points, or you can kind of take a more sort of tougher approach, or what seems more difficult, to kick to touch, you get the throw in, and then if you drive over the line, you get a try, 5 points, you kick the goal for that, you get seven. And the point I want to make is that people in our industry, when they're looking for marketing, they'll buy leads from lead generation companies. It's the easy option. Those lead generation companies will say, oh, you can have, it's X pounds per lead, and you get given them. The problem is they're poor quality. And the kind of the story I want to get across is, in this, there was this rugby game where I took the easy option. I went for the 3 points. It was the last minute to tie the game, and I sliced the kick. So I went for the easy option, and then it failed. And then I remember our coach said, look, we've got to go for seven. We've always going to go for seven. The next season, we trained that process of kicking to touch, doing the line out, driving over. And then we won the league the next season because we went for seven. We went for the win. And it's kind of saying the approach that we do is we want to generate these leads ourselves. It does seem more technical, more tricky. It's not the easy option, but there's higher chance of winning. And that's where you've got to go for seven. So I think the phrase works. It's just I can't get my structure everything correctly, if that kind of makes sense. But
well, it's a perfect phrase that pays. Go for seven is a great phrase that pays. When you craft the story, you are telling me the story of being in the match. Mm. And you're building the drama of we're coming down to the end of the game. And we've got this last minute opportunity to either tie the game or to win the game and go for seven. Mm. And you are crafting the story to build towards that. Now, at that moment, we hear you talking to yourself and saying, all right, I'm going to go for three. Or am I going to go for seven? What does the coach say? The coach would say, go for seven. Coach would say, go for seven. But what if I screw it up? What if I miss it? I'm going to go for three. And so we hear this little self-talk. And you don't have to do it as self-talk. You can just tell the story to somebody and say, so I was saying this to myself. Do I go for three or do I go for seven? Well, I know that the coach always says, go for seven. But I was scared at that moment. So you kind of narrate what's going on in your head. And then you say, so I went for three. And I sliced it and I missed it and we lost the game. Well, afterward, we're in the locker room and we're all having a conversation about what went on in that game. So now we're kind of doing the resolve of the story that's moving on to the next step of the story. Yeah. So the first part of the story ends with, I went for three and I sliced it and we lost the game. Second part of the story is 6 months later or the next year. We've been practicing going for seven. In all of our practices, it's the new mantra in the locker room, go for seven. Once we get into the game and it comes down to that moment, that crisis moment where I went for three, it's not even a question. You go for seven. You hear what I just did? How many times did I just say go for seven?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
But that is branding. There is no question at the end of the story what you want your customers to do. You want your customers to go for seven because you went for seven. And of course, you won the game. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to understand the craft of story, the sequence of story, the craft of story, the first element of story, the second element of story. But then in my nine steps, here's the real kicker. Step seven, eight, and nine. Step seven is make the point. Step eight is ask the question. Step nine is repeat the point. So in step seven, you say, so what I learned from that experience and from many experiences since then is inside the game or outside of the game in business, go for seven. If you go for three, you're playing it safe, you're going to lose. You got to go for seven. Now, how about you? When you're at crunch time in your business and you're sitting across from a customer, do you go for three? Do you go for the safe sale? Do you play it safe? Don't take a risk? Well, you got to go for seven. So my challenge to you is the next time you're sitting across from a customer and you have that challenge, go for seven. Well, that's step seven, eight, and nine. I made the point, go for seven. I asked the question, how about you? I customized the question to a financial advisor, to a mortgage broker, to somebody sitting across the table from a customer. And then I said, so my challenge for you is the next time you're sitting across from a customer, go for seven. And so seven, eight, and nine are critical to making the story work.
Absolutely. Love it. I feel like I got a bit of free coaching there, Doug. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
That's for you and for everybody. This is my joy. My joy is I apply my methodology to anybody, anywhere who wants to have a success.
Absolutely. Well, I hope lots of people are excited to think about this. And I hope a lot of people have heard other people do it and kind of recognize that this isn't a fad. This is a thing that if you look back and think about the conferences you've been to, or whether it's, you know, someone speaking or telling a story in even a pub, it's those stories that we remember, especially when there's a point driven home and done well. So I'm excited that a lot of people will want to get your book, Doug, and listen to the podcast and kind of get in touch. So tell us the name of the podcast and where I can find it, and then the book as well, if you could.
Well, the book is titled Doug Stevenson's Story Theater Method. You can get it either as a hard copy on Amazon or Google or wherever you buy things, or as a downloadable. And The podcast is called The Storytelling That Sticks for Business and Life Podcast. Storytelling That Sticks for Business and Life. And it's on Apple and Spotify and Google and Amazon and just everywhere where you can get a podcast. There's 23 episodes as of this recording on April 19th, 2023. And it's very instructive. It's what I call a how-to podcast. It's not just people telling stories and you go, well, that's all great and I remember the story, but how do I do it? My intention is always to give you how-to lessons, how you can do it. So Storytelling That Sticks for Business and Life, that's the podcast. And the Story Theater Method book is on Amazon.
Absolutely. And I think I've been loving the podcast, and it's certainly the first set of episodes. They're like 15 minutes long. It's just Doug talking through that structure, and you'll hear the proper story of the hotel thing, looking for the limo. You'll get to hear that story in full as well. So the other thing I was going to say, so my rugby story came when I heard the guest on your podcast, I've forgotten the guy's name, when he was talking about the golfing thing, where he's like, you've got to use the driver or you've got to get the driver. I can't remember the exact thing, but that made me think about sport and how sport and business can be very similar. So that kind of inspired me to use that.
Well, sports are great analogies. The arts are great analogies. Songs are great analogies. Stories are often metaphors or analogies for whatever it is you want to talk about. But we have to be careful, because if you were a jock, if you were an athlete and you played sports and you only tell sports stories, a lot of people are like, I'm not a sport. I'm a nerd. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, I'm not both, so it's all good.
I can't roll up the sports stories, and I can't just tell stories about being an actor, because it's like, well, what has that got to do with anything?
Yeah.
So telling my stories about being a speaker and sitting here in my office and having calls from people who want to hire me and telling the pill and the peanut butter story is much more relatable, because that's a practical business application.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then where's best to follow you on, like, socials as well? Are you on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter?
LinkedIn is the main social media place where I live. I have not only my own profile on LinkedIn, but I have a Storytelling for Business discussion group, specialty group on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is it. You won't find me on Facebook, Instagram. It's like I don't do all that stuff. It's just too much for me. And of course, if you want to get in touch with me, you send an email to Doug, D-O-U-G, at DougStevenson.com. Stevenson with a V. D-O-U-G at D-O-U-G-S-T-E-V-E-N-S-O-N.com. Doug at DougStevenson.com. Love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And that's what I did. I just emailed. I read the book, was a fan of the podcast, dropped the email, invited you on, and here we are. So absolutely. And I didn't realize about the LinkedIn group. So I've just followed that now, Doug. So I will and I will connect as well and say hello. I really appreciate you coming on and being with us today. Genuinely, I am a bit of a fanboy. So I've been looking forward to it for ages, and I've loved every minute that you've been with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to spread the word.
No worries. I will speak to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.